In this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon and Charles McDonald join me for some new faces and new places. Our favorites, kind of a recap of free agency, draft, coaching additions and changes, the things that we liked or we think are most interesting. Charles had a nice negative one in there to kind of balance it all out, so that was fun. We also get to some mailbag questions at the end of the show. Very, very fun show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. We are back after a little draft break after we took that really fun show that we had in LA. But today, we're going to kind of recap the offseason a little bit, kind of regroup after free agency, after the draft, after coach movement, even though there's some GMs moving around and execs moving around right now because it's the season for that. But today, we're going to look at new faces and new places, some of our favorite guys, favorite additions that teams have made, favorite team swaps, coaches, players, coordinators, could be a draft pick, could be free agency, could be a group of guys, because I like to cheat a little bit on these assignments. But to help me do that, to help me go over these new faces and new places, my guy, Matt Harmon. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good, Nate. It's weird to not be in the same room as you guys, back in our virtual little boxes here. I think the week away actually definitely made me realize I hate this chair. So on the offseason,
I was thinking
list,
the same thing,
I've actually been complaining for a while. I've been complaining to Brett, our podcast overlord, that I want to do these shows standing. And he's like, well, you can do that. Just you got to redo your background, which... seems like a lot of work for me to do. So I think on the offseason to-do list is maybe the new chair. But other than that, and like missing that. You guys, I'm doing great.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, except about the chair. My chair is actually okay. I'll give mine a B. But you might have heard him right there talking about his chair as well, who's also joining us, Mr. Vertz. Charles McDonald, how you doing today, Chuck? Good to see you.
Been doing good. I've been watching Vatican draft coverage all week, basically. We just got some white smoke. So The new faces, new places pod, we're going to have a new pope, which is pretty interesting. I've been playing this game called Crusader Kings 3. If you play it, holler at me because there's so much going on there. And I kind of got stuck reading about medieval for like the last week. And I'm kind of prepared for
this. You're into the Crusades right now, right? Really big into the Crusades.
Not just the Crusades. I kind of like got lost in like, how the hell did you guys like actually contact each other? Because I learned so much about like the culture like meshing throughout throughout Europe and Asia. And then I was like, well, I guess it just took a long time. People died. You know, the answer that I had in my head was the actual answer, you know?
That was it. It was a little horseback messaging and hopefully it got there. Hopefully head's on straight.
You two better stop talking about this or Joey's going to hit you both up for Pope Big Board rankings or Pope Mock Drafts. We better not get into this.
Matt, our friend Justice Mosqueda actually has that covered already. He wrote up Pope scouting reports for this election. And then he's sleeping through all of it right now. It's so good. Yeah. So good.
It was good. As a fellow Catholic, it was very nice for me to act like I knew something. I think he gave up, though, when he was putting together the big board, once he came across a cardinal with the last name Pizzaballa. And then he was like, yeah, all right, I'm good. He's like, no way. That's what I'm leaving it on is Pizzaballa. But yeah, big day. Big day for the white smoke lovers. Have you guys seen Conclave the movie?
Yes, I watched it last week.
It's on my to-do list. Yeah, it's on my to-do list.
You saw it, Chuck? Did you like it?
To me, it's like one of those times, it's really good, but it's like, you ever been writing something and you have a word limit and you realize like, oh man, I'm really flowing. I got 100 words left, but you don't want to go back and fix what you wrote. So you just cram it all in the end. That's what Conclave felt like. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect movie until like the South Park guys got in the last 10 minutes, you know?
Okay.
Perfect.
That was not what I thought you were going with. So Trey Parker and Matt Stone wrapped it up. That was it.
Yeah.
No. But it actually kind of works. That was a great little tie-in there that we do have a new face in the Vatican. And that's what we're going to be talking about again. We're going to be coaches, players, coordinators. And we actually got a moving face in Dallas. A new face in Dallas. The Cowboys traded for receiver George Pickens. How about that segue? Way to go. No, but the Cowboys get George Pickens, receiver, of course, and a 2027 sixth-round pick. The Steelers, who traded away Pickens, get a 2026 third-rounder and a 2027 fifth-rounder. Matt, what do you think about George Pickens now in a Cowboys uniform? I have some thoughts on this that I'm actually kind of excited to share as well. But I'm curious what you think about this addition in Dallas.
Yeah, I actually wrote a recap piece on this for the site, kind of went into way too much detail because I think this is a little bit of a complicated thing to unpack here because George Pickens is a little bit of a complicated player. Number one, though, let me just say off the top, like I like the trade for Dallas, and I think you can like the trade for Dallas while also acknowledging, I think it'd be stupid if you didn't acknowledge that there are some real risks with George Pickens, the player. I mean, Nate, it's funny because a couple of people were circulating this clip when the trade went down, when you and I talked at the beginning of the season. I think it was like right after week four, I said that I think George Pickens is playing the best football of his career in isolation. Like he was just smoking man coverage and not really just on the George Pickens routes. You know, we think about these vertical routes, outbreakers to the sideline and stuff like that. He was winning on like quick slants. He was winning on like these stop routes, or he was really timing things well. I just thought he was playing great football in isolation and against some tough defenses too. Like I thought his film against Patrick Surtain in week two was really, really strong. Just obviously Justin Fields was still getting his feet wet and everything. It didn't really come into the box score. And then ironically, right after that game, of course, and against his now new team, the Dallas Cowboys, he has like one of his worst games in the season where he's loafing through routes, where he's not engaged with the process. You know, when plays aren't going his way, he's just kind of out there doing his own thing. He plays like sub 60% of the snaps. It's kind of, he's just back to his old ways. And he has a great stretch of games against the, during the Russell Wilson, part of the season. He misses three games. He comes back. He has another game on Christmas Day where his effort is being brought into question.
Yeah.
He goes catchless in week 18 against the Cincinnati Bengals. Two drops, multiple miscues at the catch point. And then he has one catch for 8 yards and offensive pass interference penalty in the blowout loss in the first half against the Baltimore Ravens. So that's kind of the roller coaster that the Steelers were on with George Pickens. And I'm on record with this like since the end of the season and especially after the combine, before the DK Metcalf trade, I thought that Pickens was not coming back to this team this year. So I'm not surprised that he got dealt. A little surprised it happened after the draft, but we can get into all that. So again, like I think it's instructive to view the trade that way because the Steelers decided we want off this ride, but the Cowboys decided we want on this ride because he so perfectly fits the exact need that they have for a vertical X receiver, 3.16 yards per route run against man coverage the last 2 years. That trails only Nico Collins, CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown. Like the things that he is good at, he is really, really good at when he is fully engaged with the rest of the offense and everything that's going around him. So that's sort of, again, the roller coaster ride that the Cowboys are choosing to get on. And I like the bet for them for a third round pick. Totally like it. Totally get it. But I think you do have to acknowledge that there are some, like, there's a reason a 24-year-old receiver who's theoretically in his prime is available in the month of May. And those are all the reasons why.
Yeah. He's getting banged up. Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you, Charles, what, too. But remember, he was getting banged up. And also, it was like his on off splits were the most important thing for the Steelers. You became like one of the most important players for the Steelers. At the same time, they're like over him.
Yeah.
Conundrum there. But Charles, what were you going to say?
I think even the Cowboys compensation here suggests they're thinking, well, we'll see. We'll see how this year goes. Yeah. Because what they're kind of doing is like passing up a comp pick from like 2027. So they'll trade the third to the Steelers this year, see what happens with George. If he's good, you keep him. If he's not good enough, then maybe you walk and you get like a fourth round comp pick the following year. So they're definitely protecting themselves here. And I think it's interesting from a point where George was disengaged as the number one guy in this offense, right? Yeah. I get it. The offensive ecosystem wasn't great. Sure, maybe Justin Fields wasn't the right fit for you. Play a little better when Russell Wilson got the lineup. But everything you said, Matt, I don't think anyone can deny that about George. Like the stuff that's funny, like where you see him flipping out and throwing DBs all over the field when he's not even a part of the play anymore, like that's part of the whole thing of being
the experience.
Built like the experience, you're not like the most normal guy when you know the DBs pick, one DB's picked off the ball and you're in tackling range, but you decide to literally just fight his teammate and punch him on the ground instead, right?
Yeah.
so this all comes back together. And I just, I'm really curious to see how he fits when the CeeDee Lamb is going to be the number one target, obviously. Like, he and Dak can play forever. Mm-hmm. He's a better receiver than George. He's more dialed in. And also, as we saw in the draft, Tyler Booker pick, they want to run the piss out of the ball. There's going to be only so many opportunities for George. Maybe there'll probably be higher quality opportunities, but will he be engaged enough to make the most of them? I don't know. And I think that's kind of sad, because on paper, like, you tell me Dak, CeeDee, and someone who like just is as talented as Pickens, that sounds like a good passing game to me. But you got to put his brain in the picture, and I get nervous for this, where he's not going to get the production that he wants. He's not going to get more targets than CeeDee Lamb. And I don't think that's going to fly for a team that really did like fight their ass off in the back half of the season. Like, we talked about it during the year. Yeah. Michael Parsons was freaking out at those losses, even though they didn't have a chance to get to the playoffs. That's kind of like the culture that got built in that locker room. You better adapt, or Mike might whoop your ass, bro.
And Dak's like that too.
Yes,
like, Dak rubs people the wrong way because he's so competitive. Like, because he's like, it's kind of that. God, I hate to use it, that Mamba mindset. But it's like, why should I give you the ball if you're not working as hard as I am? Like, he kind of has that, and that can rub people the wrong way. The thing is with like Pickens, it's like one man's terrorist is another man's ex receiver. That's kind of how I feel. It's like the Steelers, like, yeah, enough of this. But the Cowboys are going like, well, we've needed this for a while now since Gallup got hurt. Like, they've needed this X receiver that can win stop routes. Like, I keep coming back to it. You even mentioned the stop routes, Matt, that Pickens was good on in Pittsburgh, is because Dak Prescott is addicted to throwing stop routes. Like, he loves static routes where he thinks he can win with ball placement. And that's because of the offense that he was introduced to in the NFL, Linehan, Kellen Moore, that type of offense that features those. Most offenses have evolved from that. And Dak's like, no, I still want them. I still want these stop routes. So stop route is like a 9 to 12 yard hitch, basically, is what you're running a go and then you stop. And Dak loves those ISO throws. CeeDee is good on those, but that's not the best skill set for CeeDee. And if you have CeeDee as that ISO guy doing it, it kind of limits the rest of your offense, because you want CeeDee in the slot. And you want him being a power slot, and it can bump out to Z and do some flanker stuff. But I really, that's where he thrives, in the movement, getting some yak, bouncing off a tackle, going to work on the middle of the field, and just being that nice big body in the middle. So that's where I do like this. This is actually where I was getting interested in the Tetaro McMillan maybe going to the Cowboys, because of the exact same things. They need an X. They need a guy that can be a stop route ball winner, you know, back shoulder ball winner. And this makes sense. It's the same type of role, even if I think McMillan was a much better prospect than Pickens, same type of role. And I just think the Cowboys need this. The costs, we'll see, kind of going off what you said, Charles. It's kind of, it's a rental, but, you know, rental to buy, you know, lease to buy kind of thing here, which it's a little rich, but this is the Cowboys. This is where they're at right now. You have CeeDee, Micah Parsons, and Dak Prescott. And you got a lot of good there. And then now I actually went in totality, you look at what they did in the draft. This makes a lot of sense, and I actually really like it. Do you guys have any thoughts on what the Steelers can maybe do next, Matt? Or like, any thoughts that, like, do you like where the Steelers are at? Say they, okay, and hypothetically, they sign Aaron Rodgers, which is just like what it seems like. What do you envision this offense looking like without Pickens? And do you think that is a good thing, bad thing, middling thing?
Like, I mean, Charles Caleb, over there.
I know. I'm laughing. Glad you were over here, Charles. Charles gave a nice inhale there. So he pumped his Caleb, shit in like Peter Griffin.
Caleb Johnson, you better go take out a nice life insurance policy, my guy, because it's about to get rough over there. But you know, because I was looking at their depth chart after the trade, and I was like, man, if wide receivers weren't a part of football, I could maybe talk myself into some of this offense, because the offensive line should be all right. You know,
what happened to the not real football players, Charles? What happened?
Just
what happened
my
to that?
Language right now?
I'm just saying. If you just ignore the skill players, right? It's not bad, right? Because we like Caleb Johnson. We talked about him a bunch the past month. We know the Steelers offensive line, before they all, you know, just got decimated with injuries last year, they're playing pretty well. We'll see what happens with Broderick Jones at left tackle. oh, but the receivers past DK. It's like, are we? Is Robert Woods really going to be a wide receiver too in 2025? They're gonna have to trade for someone. I don't know. Maybe you go get someone off the Packers depth chart now. They pick Matthew Golden. But shoot, you got to do something because we said last year. I remember last year when we were talking about the Steelers, we were like, oh, you're really going to see the seasons with Roman Wilson is like maybe your wide receiver too, and like you're right back to where you were. Although DK is better than Pickens, but still got to get Rodgers to actually sign. Man, like just chaotic offseason, really chaotic offseason.
Yeah, I was gonna say Charles is familiar with the Arthur Smith, like the number one wide receiver in the Funky Bunch. Like that's what he had in Atlanta. It was just like we were replacing George Pickens with DK Metcalf. Pickens replaced, you know, Drake London in this scenario, and Drake London replaced AJ Brown in this like scenario. When we're looking at Arthur Smith offense, it's like, this is what it generally looks like. You know, people talking about them signing like Keenan Allen. Dude, Keenan Allen's like one of the worst blocking receivers in football last year. No. They're not signing Keenan Allen. I don't think they're going to go down the Amari Cooper road. That doesn't really mesh personality wise either, or skill set wise, honestly. Like I think the Romeo Doubs trade potentially that people are talking about, that does make sense, although he is mostly a kind of a like a straight line player himself. So there's we're kind of doing the same thing with DK Metcalf, but like a several tiers down version. So I'm not quite sure. Like I honestly won't be surprised if they just roll into the season with DK Metcalf getting 25% of the targets on a lot of these inbreakers off play action, and then everybody else kind of file in and figure it out. Like Robert Woods basically replaces Van Jefferson, who was mostly just a snap eating blocker. Like I think that might be what we get here,
which is fine for his role, but that's like receiver four. It should be not receiver two on an offense. I think the run game's gonna be sick. At least we got that. Mm-hmm. You know, run game's gonna be great. Some of the play action stuff will probably be fun with DK around those inbreakers, but it's just like it's funny. It's like I understand why they moved on from Pickens, but then it's like, well, You need someone there. I like Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson's slot only to me. That's how I look back at my evaluation. I watched, he barely played last year because of injuries. Slot only. And he's a feisty blocker, but he's not like a badass, you know, go maul a guy down. So they're just, that Z spot is just missing for them. They're going to be in a lot of two tight end looks. That's what they like to do. Just missing that little something. I think the run game's going to be fun though. You'll hear me in October talking about the run game as the Steelers steal a victory. And then they finish the season 8-9 or 9-8 like they usually do. But we are going to actually get on to now our list, new faces and new places. Matt, you're going to bat lead off here. What was your favorite or most interesting new face, new place from this offseason in the NFL?
Yeah, I ended up going with more coaches than I wanted to, just because I feel like it's more all-encompassing because there's a trickle-down effect. And I will play the hits here, and I will say that my person I'm excited to see in a new place is Liam Cohen with the Jacksonville Jaguars, because it allows us to talk about a lot of different things here. I think
you understood the assignment.
Again, it's the trickle-down effect here. Like, yes, I'm excited about Liam Cohen getting a shot as a head coach. I'm more excited to consider what he brings to this entire offensive ecosystem. Obviously, they draft Travis Hunter. Can't wait to see how they integrate him into the offense. I continue to be mystified, especially as people are starting to have fantasy conversations like, well, what if he plays like 60%? He's playing more than 60% of the snaps on offense, folks. That is what is going to happen here. And then for the rest of the players too, like where does Brian Thomas Jr. get deployed? I'm pretty curious about that because he was a guy who played kind of all over the formation, and Cohen's talked about this, not just the guy who was mostly what he was at LSU, which was a little bit of this like DK Metcalf thing that we're talking about, like the George Pickens, like the straight line X receiver. He wasn't that at all. He was, you know, I've mentioned this stat a lot, over 10 yards per target on screens last year. The Bucs screen game was awesome. I think they could use Travis Hunter on a lot of these screen concepts as well. So just interested to see that, especially then what Trevor Lawrence becomes in this offense, because I think people have forgotten what we were talking or how we were talking about Baker Mayfield prior to his arrival in Tampa Bay as just a complete first overall flame out and a guy who, you know, I mean, fell on his face with the Carolina Panthers to the point that he was released and then played with that, you know, kind of whatever forgettable 2022 Rams team. Like he was more down bad than whatever you think like down bad is for Trevor right now. Baker was worse, and he was an incredibly productive player for Liam Cohen's Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. And then finally, and this is the thing people have not talked about enough with the Jacksonville Jaguars under the Doug Peterson era, their run game stunk. I mean, it was horrible. I went back and looked at this when I thought, like, okay, are they drafting Ashton Jeanty? They were 29th in rushing success rate under Doug Peterson's watch. They were one of the five worst run games for a three-year stretch. And if what we saw last year in Tampa Bay is any indication, and some of the investments that they made across the line, you know, Patrick McCary, Robert Hainsey at center, I think this run game is going to look a lot better. So big trickle-down effect here for Liam Cohen, I think, has to be mentioned as a player. Or as a coach, I'm excited to see in a lot of players and how they get used.
Confidence is just so important for all of us, but athletes especially. And a guy, especially Baker, was who, like, his number one attribute was his confidence and competitiveness. Like, those were his calling cards. So it is kind of funny to see Baker, those last days with Cleveland were bad, drifting in the pocket, throwing double coverage, just trying to make plays one after another. So that's a great point to bring up. Like, Cohen, like, rebuild his confidence. Like, that offense really kind of picked up, and you could see him get more confident ripping those throws, the Sterling Shepard out routes that we have to mention once a month. But I think that's a great point with the Jags offense too, is that Liam Cohen he has a lot of Sean McVay in that offense. It's kind of a hybrid offense, and even if you look at the coaching staff, it's going to be a little bit of hybrid, but that means it's more of an at-you run game than a zone run game. There's zone in there, but more just direct and more at you. That's going to build confidence with that run game. And then on top of it, like you said, all the screen stuff that complements off of it. Why I bring that up is that I just always thought Doug Peterson, who is a true, true Andy Reid disciple, meaning it's old school West Coast, meaning the run game is finesse, meaning the run game is more about splashing water and tricking you and using speed and everything. So there's just a philosophy change here. And I just like, it might not always be pretty. I wish they got one more lineman. I did like the Millen pick in the third round, but it's just like maybe one more guy, but they're going to be at you. And I like that. It's not going to be as tricky. It's going to be like, no, well-designed, and we have talent now. I mean, Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter, that's fun.
That's sick.
That's so much speed at receiver, man. Charles, what do you think about Liam Cohen, the Jags? Because it is one of those where it's like, I've been kind of lukewarm, but kind of like tempering my expectations. But now as I'm really envisioning it and seeing how excited they are, it could be spicy.
Well, the thing that I think is giving people pause, maybe me pause, is like I like the idea of all of this, right? It was just the way it all got put together, you know, where it got a little discombobulated in the last minute right before they hired, right, very Jaguars, you know. They hired their GM like a day before the combine started, he has intro press conferences like the day that we landed in Indianapolis. So little Jaguars-y to get to this point. But as long as the offensive line is good, I think they'll have a chance to have a pretty good offense. Because that took their offense to such a consistent level last year where, you know, if you have the receiver, the injuries that they had at receiver, you can kind of flip your offense on the fly because you can keep everyone upright and move people up front. It's kind of a big deal in football. So as long as they can just improve from where they were last year up front, I think they'll have a pretty good offense. And then we'll see what his plan is for Brian Thompson and Travis Hunter. But at least you saw last year on the fly, he can come up with a new plan that works. And obviously Travis, they talk about it after the draft. They're going to have a pretty big plan for him to looks like they're going to try and play both ways, you know, maybe start offense. And then they're going to do the special stuff on defense, but the defensive coordinator, she's on board. So I'm interested to see what's going on with it. Because at least he was creative enough last year where, you know, he's going to think and try instead of just, trying to put the square peg in the round hole.
Yeah. And, you know, they're really excited about Brent Strange. So I'm curious to see how they use him. I actually like the tight end room a lot. They got some dirty work guys. Yeah. I think this is gonna be a nice revamped offense, which I think we were pretty bullish on. But like you said, Charles, a little bit, it's like, I guess he's September. And then I'll be like, okay, this is how you're doing it. Okay, cool. But like, I am optimistic. It's just, I just have to see it a little bit. But Charles, on to you. What was your first favorite new place or new face in the new place?
More Malachi Starks with the Baltimore Ravens. Just
I classic. Almost went this they, one. They, so
they, nice. they just sit there and just wait and see who ends up in their lap every year. And now you have Malachi Starks with Kyle Hamilton, which is, it's just such an awesome pairing. I thought people got down a little bit too hard on Malachi maybe after the combine last year, but it's just hard to look away from like 3 years of good tape, starting as a freshman on a national championship team that had a million first round picks on it. He was like the Renaissance player for Georgia's defense over the past few years, where you need him to do a little bit of everything, and he was able to do a little bit of everything, and that's what we've described the Ravens defense has over the past couple seasons. So I think it's going to give them a lot of positional flexibility on the back end, and they really needed an upgrade at safety anyways. Marcus Williams banged up, not the guy he used to be. Darius Washington, a little small for the position. So I think him moving back to that third safety role is probably a little bit more productive for him. And now you get a starter, you get some depth. So I really like this as one of their final pieces, kind of build out this safety room after they move on from Marcus Williams. And if he plays well as a rookie, this should be one of the best defenses in football because they have guys up front. Hopefully Roquan Smith can bounce back a little bit from where he was last year, but the secondary should be like strapped lockdown.
Yeah. And last year, and we brought this up a lot in playoff time, was their defense was so vastly improved, and they made the changes. Kyle Hamilton's in the back end. They talked about it a bunch last season, but it was really cool the last 2 months to see those changes. But then now, so they also were starting to run a little bit more dime, which is six DBs, and dime is great when you have two kind of versatile safety types that can do literally everything. Like that's nice. That's a lot of fun too. But also the three weaknesses, and we just mentioned it: Brandon Stevens, who got shoveled off corner, okay, or Darius Washington, who you just mentioned, and then Roquan Smith. In some order, those were their coverage weaknesses, and you could see them try to mitigate that a lot as the season went along. We're going to invert this coverage, make sure we're clouding this side. But the thing that Starks frees them up to do is, okay, we can, all right, do we want our Darius off the field? Okay, we can do that. Do we want Kyle Hamilton in the slot, or do we want Starks in the slot? Okay, either way, we can do that because they both can do that. Okay, then also that bumps up Marlon Humphrey to the outside again. So that takes a spot of Stevens. So you're not only, I always like the line that going from to not is good, you know, but like going from to good, That's like four tiers of improvement, you know? So I really think that just like, yes, you're adding a good player, but it truly is the trickle-down effect of everyone gets to go in better roles. So yeah, this is, I mean, it's pretty, I never thought this pairing would actually happen because I just thought Starks was so much better player than to go in the last six picks of the first round. But it was one of those fan fiction things that actually kind of happened. So yeah, this is a good one because I think that this really made a lot of sense for where the Ravens are at. Should I go on to my first one? Like you, Matt, I cheated a little bit. I was going to say cheated. Just expand on the assignment. I used a coach to then talk about a unit. And that is Mr. Clint Kubiak with the Seattle Seahawks. Really, how I labeled this was Kubiak and the Funky Bunch. And then should be in parentheses of players. Because I think they've given him free reign to get this personnel like how he wants it. And I'm kind of digging it. So it is. So they drafted Gray Zabel. It is Zabel, Charles. You kept throwing me a lifeline. So I said Zabel months ago, got corrected on a show. And I was like, well, you must know better, host who corrected me. I'm not going to name their name. But, oh, you must know better because you corrected me like that. All right. So it's Zabel. No, it's Zabel. It's Zabel. All right. So yeah, Gray Zabel, though. Right.
Because I was like, what the hell is Zabel? Like, where is he from? He went to school in North Dakota, man.
I was like, okay, you. I mean, yeah. Man, they corrected me so quick. And I was like, okay, you must know better than I do. Like, and you're in the Midwest, so. But no, drafting him, that guard makes a ton of sense. Like the value. That long term could be the center. All good stuff. I just say Zabel again. But then Elijah Royal, the tight end room, really like this. Could be a real weapon. I really wanted them to take a tight end high because of where their situation's set up. They got A.J. Barner blocking. Really like that as well. Noah Fant, they'll probably move on from him this year, after this year. But they have two tight end looks kind of locked up. Really like that. And just different flavors in that room that makes sense. Jalen Milroe, fun gadget QB to develop. Like, and honestly, in an offense that actually might use them in the right way early on, as far as truly that red zone role, short yardage, the obvious comparisons to Taysom Hill role. But save Darnold some hits. Like, even though Darnold can do it, save him some hits. That's your starting quarterback. You don't want to do that. The receiver room, a little too much sameness with Cup and JSN, but I do like the personality addition. MVS is the field stretcher as well. Torrey Horton, I liked him as a day three addition as well. But just this offensive line, I look at it is that if Christian Haynes, if Christian Haynes, who they drafted last year, who I was a fan of, this is a much better offense for him because it puts him on the move and he can use his athleticism. He lacked a little lower body strength, so he could kind of get bull rushed. He's almost like a classic Shanahan guard. Really good athlete, a little bit undersized, but can really move and a really good technician and everything. So that actually, I think this is a perfect offensive fit for him. Don't have offensive tackle depth, but it's coming together for me. And I think that defense is going to be really good. That Seahawks defense ended really good last year. They bring a lot of guys back and they've dropped in some new additions. Yeah, there's some overpays and everything, but I'm liking this team a lot. Like I'm just very bullish on this Seahawks team, and maybe just the additions that they've made are all guys I like. So I'm like, yeah, Scott, stock up, let's go. But Kubiak, this offense, Darnold in there as well, it's making a lot of sense in my brain. And I think I'm encouraged about what this offense is going to be and really with the defense as well. So Seattle Seahawks, Kubiak, and the Funky Bunch. Am I just too bullish, Charles? Or am I anything no. dragged down here?
Well, how many wins are you? How many wins are you expecting?
I think they could be a 10-win team. Nine or ten.
Yeah.
The NFC West is going to be a bloodbath, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
It is. Dude, I noticed everyone's running two tight ends in the NFC West.
Yeah.
Everybody. It's the receiverless league.
Great time for the 49ers to draft a 210-pound linebacker and a 5'8 cornerback. But that's what you can hear over there. I just don't know if they'll have like the consistent firepower. Like I guess 9 wins does kind of work. This team kind of reminds me of like a better version of the one that Sam played on here in the, for the Jets when Greg Williams was defensive coordinator and they had a top 10 defense, made a lot of plays, but they couldn't score a goddamn lick. I don't expect them to be that bad. But it's just the division's so tough. Because even with the defense that they have, you're still going to get got sometimes when you play, obviously, what the Rams have. Can't fully count the 49ers offense. And then Kyler Murray's a little firecracker himself, even though they did F him up last year a couple of times. So it's hard to project sometimes like rock fight football, because I would imagine all their games would be pretty close this year, which means you can go either way. So I think like maybe seven to eight wins is probably where I'd have them this year. But they'll be feisty for sure. Like I think they'll be a fun Monday watch, but maybe not the best Sunday watch.
That's a good way to put it. And maybe these are teams I become suckers for every year.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you're going to do this cool scheme stuff and you have some players I like, and then they lose. I'm like, don't worry. They're fun. They're the first ones I'm posting clips of and everything. So yeah, that's a good point. Matt, how have you thought about this kind of like their passing game kind of sorting out? Like I know after the Cooper Kupp and the MVS stuff, we talked about briefly in the free agency period, but I kind of want to revisit it a little bit. Like, how do you think this passing game might be okay? Like JSN's role, maybe.
Well, it's funny because you brought up, obviously, Kubiak is one of your favorite new additions. It's pretty clear the Seattle Seahawks are very high on Kubiak. I mean, because like the whole offseason has been like, how do we get everything here to fit around what Clint Kubiak wants to do, which is a little, I mean, I think Kubiak did a good job with the Saints last year, all things considered. And I was intrigued by that hire, but like, we're really just reshaping the entire roster to fit the vision of our offensive coordinator. I don't know. It's probably a good idea. I just wonder if like, how did he get this much cachet within the organization this quickly? And whose idea was it to hire Ryan Grubb? Because that went about as poorly as it possibly could. But I've been thinking about this a lot just with, because I've been watching, I was actually just watching the Niners offense. So I was working on Ricky Pearsall. And they just, like, in this scheme, we get too caught up in who's the slot and who's the outside, because everything's so condensed anyways. Yeah. And I think JSN being like a condensed outside, like the outside receiver off the line of scrimmage, but it's a condensed formation, he still has so much more space to operate that his slot receiver skills will translate well to being an exterior player.
Good point.
I just think he's going to dramatically out-target everybody on this team. So I don't think Cooper Kupp's got that much left. And I mean, that definitely worries you, right? If you have basically one guy and then a bunch of rotating role players, unless Torrey Horton can really hit the ground running. And I like Torrey Horton too, but he's a fifth round rookie. So
right.
I don't know. I think that that part of it is maybe a little over fretted about, but I still have plenty of questions about the ceiling of this team. And I'm kind of with Charles that I think in the bloodbath that this division probably is, I see them more as like a 7-win team.
That's a great
point. Milroe, though. What's excited for that.
Yeah, Milroe.
See just what they do. You're going to have to find some way to give him the ball just to see.
Yeah. Maybe he's the guy that takes off the top of the defense. That's a great point with the condensed splits, though, because it's just like a bunch or a stack split. But I mean, that's what ends up becoming. So, like, yeah, that works totally in JSN's favor. And his numbers on the outside have always been favorable, or at least good, above baseline.
Yeah,
so
he's good. Cooper, I'm not worried about
it. It's Cup on the outside that I'm
no.
like, no, never.
No.
Never do that. So, We'll revisit the Seahawks in the summer. We'll maybe have to get a little wager on them. Well, we'll have over under anyway. So yeah, we'll revisit this in the future. But we're going to take our first break and we'll come back with a few more favorite new faces and new places. All right, we are back. And now going to Matt for his next favorite new face, new place. What do you got for us, Matt?
I will stick in the NFC West there, and I'll just talk about Davante Adams, man. I mean, I kind of tried to skew away from draft prospects here because I just talked about these damn incoming rookies so long. So I kind of wanted to go back to things that happened a long time ago, seemingly, it feels like, that the Rams signed Davante Adams. And I just thought this was such a cool move for a variety of reasons. Number one, I think it allows them to do a lot of different things with both him and Puka Nacua. I feel like we talked about this when the signing happened, but Davante had some really interesting reps from the slot last year with the New York Jets. That allows them to not just have Puka Nacua be the primary slot player, but a slot only player. Not that he would be, but I also think for what this really brings, like for the first time in a minute, like a true X receiver to this team. I mean, the last time they had a guy playing that role effectively was Odell Beckham during the Super Bowl run, running all of the backside routes and winning against press man coverage. I mean, that's what they wanted Allen Robinson to be. That obviously did not work out. They haven't even really tried to fill that position with anybody but like DeMarcus Robinson the last few years. So I do think like they'll do some interesting things in terms of where they line him up, Davante Adams, and they'll do some slot receiver stuff. And obviously Puka's going to do so much damage off of motion. That like I just said with the Seahawks example, some of the lines between who's the inside receiver, who's the outside receiver will be blurred. But what is not going to be blurred is that there's going to be a large majority of the snaps this year where Davante Adams, again, is on Matthew Stafford's backside. He's along the boundary. He's just truly a pure X receiver there in the truest sense of the form. And I think we saw enough last year from Davante in isolation. Like, he might not be peak Davante Adams, but he is definitely a guy who can still get open against press man coverage, which was a skill set that this team desperately needed. Is why they moved on from Cooper Kupp, because he cannot do those things anymore. So I think this gives them one of the best receiver tandems in the NFL in Matthew Stafford's kind of closing moments in his NFL career. And I think that addition plus just the strength of the roster overall makes them, I would say, the clear favorite in a division that is a very crowded and is going to be very good.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about this. This was the one overlap. So we all gave five answers for this, and this was the one overlap we had because this was also one of mine. Wow. But I'll share my points in 1 second.
I almost put it on there, but I figured one of you guys would put it on there.
Yeah. One of my favorite moves of the offseason. It really is. There's more to it, but Charles, why'd you almost put it on there?
Because I think Davante is still good. I thought last year, him and Aaron, they just weren't on the same page, but I thought Davante still looked fast. He still looked explosive. And I think pairing him with, at this point in his career, pairing him with another receiver like Puka, who can be a target hog, is probably going to be pretty good for him. And you're just in a much better ecosystem with Sean McVay than you were last year with whatever that was.
Whatever that was.
Yeah. didn't work Mordor. Out so well. Mordor, yeah. you got Frodo Baggins in the cast of The Office walking the Mordor, you know, it's really was really, really not good over there.
Alan Lazard is helping out there somewhere.
Yeah. And that's like one of their prized guys, you know? And then it's funny because the play, the Devonta play that sticks out to me actually was an interception by Aaron against the Steelers. And he hawked the DB down like 50 yards across the field and tackled him at the 1 yard line. I was like, okay, I mean, you can still go. There were a lot of times too in the back half of the season where he would get naked open, like on a really nice route, mm-hmm. and Aaron would just stale it or he wouldn't see him. So I think that obviously, like we were talking about with George Pickens earlier, there's going to be more quality targets in this offense. There's going to be a good plan for him, better ecosystem, quarterback's good. So I really like this. And I really also just love Sean McVay's commitment to playing big boy, grown man football. And this is just another step in the right direction.
I know. NFC West, man. It's just gonna be fist fights. I mean, it really is. It's gonna be. I'm very excited about. No, this was almost one of mine because it just fits everything you guys said. It's the X with Puka as the Z. I think Sean McVay, that Terrence Ferguson pick, indicates a lot too. Is that there? He wants to be a two tight end team. He wants to be a 12 personnel team. They use 12 personnel 50% of the time last year, which was the highest rate since 2020 for them. Parkinson's their blocker. Davis Allen's a nice athlete. Higbee is Higbee, you know, nice balanced tight end. But then you got Ferguson, who runs like a deer, and he fights as a blocker, but he is the Cooper Kupp replacement in this offense, much like all that discussion about Bowers there last year. Ferguson's kind of the diet, the Coke Zero version of Bowers. But I just like these additions. They got the speed guy in Tutu Atwell, if they want to run a shot play. They got Jordan Whittington as the dirty work guy. The O-line, I love. They got bullies on the O-line. They're going to dictate defenses. They're going to go 12. Their defense is to say, hey, what personnel are you going to try out there? Oh, you're going to go nickel? Okay, here comes duo. And we're just going to run it down your throat. Oh, okay, now you want to go sub? Or now you want to go base against us? All right, now we're going to throw a Puka with one of these tight ends with Devontae Adams beating you one-on-one. I brought up the stats. I won't reiterate them now, but when this signing happened, it made sense too because the Rams had struggles against man coverage last year, or Stafford did. Devontae Adams was still like a top 18, 15 receiver against man coverage last year. So, boom, nice little fit there too. So, yeah, this made all the sense in the world. I didn't like Devontae with everybody in this. I still like him a lot. Like, he's like a 2A in my brain right now. But now it's like you get him with this offense. It's like, yeah, that makes total sense. Absolute sense, role, fit, everything. So, yeah, this is probably why all three of us probably wanted to have this one on there because, yeah, I think we're all excited about this edition and the Ferguson edition as well. All right, Charles, what's your next one?
I'm going to keep it brief because we touched on it earlier, but just Travis Hunter finally getting to the NFL.
the league.
If I were advising him, I would tell him to pick one, offense, defense. You know, it's too much to remember, too much work during the week. You're getting paid like real money now to try and do this for the next decade. Let's think about this. But as someone who is not advising him and someone who likes watching football, I am pumped to see him just try and just see what this ends up looking like. It's just something we haven't really seen before. Like, we've seen guys who have like Deion had a season where he had like 400 receiving yards, but that was by far his career high. So you haven't really seen something like this since like guys like had second jobs, you know, and they were coming back from the war and
platoon football wasn't implemented yet.
Yes, because I was looking. I was like, who are who might be like the last like true two way player that was actually like good? And it was like Chuck Knark, who was all pro at center and linebacker for the Eagles in like 1950 something. So, all pro center and linebacker.
Wow.
What do you weigh? What do you weigh? Like 245? Like, what are we talking about?
It was like 230, 240 something. Yeah. I think it was like 230. Yeah. Which would make him a pretty big linebacker for back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
So you ever seen Dick Buckus'
film in the 60s? Because Dick Buckus is like 6'5", 260, playing monster. Mike linebacker in the 60s. It's snuff film.
terrifying stuff.
Yeah, it should be fair, but
I've watched some Dick Buckus stuff, and I was surprised that he was able to be as lively as he was towards the end, you know.
because
it got violent out there. But yeah, I just want to see Travis Hunter try just for the spectacle of it. So I hope it works. We'll be seated for all of it.
I like this. He graduated today too, so congrats to Travis Hunter, two-time academic All-American. You know, we got to note that too. So the mental load's a lot. Like that's just.
Look, he's gonna try. He's gonna work his ass off.
He's gonna work his ass off. That's why I love him. He's a football genius. Like you can see it. Yeah. How he plays.
Every time he talks about playing both ways, he brings that up about like, yeah, I don't have to go to school anymore. So you got to sleep for eight hours, and all the rest are just football. I'm like, I don't know if I totally buy that, but I might like 90% buy it.
It can be sweet. It could be really, really cool. But it's one of those where it's like someone has a boat. It's like, I don't want to own the boat. I want my friend to own the boat.
Yeah.
And so it's like, the Jags own the boat. Yeah. Let me see how you use it. I'm going to check it out and ride it once in a while. See how it goes. So, I like that a lot. I think we're pretty bullish. I wouldn't say bullish. Pretty excited to watch the Jaguars this year.
Everyone should be. All right. Just to see what it looks like.
It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun. It really is. All right. I'm going to go with my next one. I'm using a player to kind of launch it to my whole spiel here. I'm going with Joe Tooney to the Bears. Just let's get an adult in the room. No more half measures, Walter. No more. Just full. Let's finish this. So an actual leader in the room with pedigree, with an actually good player. And I know everyone's image of Joe Tooney, because they only get spotlighted this when they watch in the playoffs, is him getting massacred at left tackle. No, this is an all-pro guard who barely misses time, all-time type of captain leader, but also because this has been like the Falcons pass rush for the Bears, this team has not had a workable center since Olin Krutz retired. So Olin's gone, they signed Drew Dahlman, but Joe Tooney can play center. If they have an injury, Joe Tooney can play center. We have answers. The Bears, answers on the offensive line. I'm just like so proud of them for actually doing this. But you got to shore up the middle. Your quarterback's sub 6'2". It's just physics. Sean Payton had Drew Brees for years. And guess what the Saints always did? They made sure the interior of the offensive line was good. Like that's what they always did. They traded Jimmy Graham for a center at one point to make sure that interior of the offensive line was good. And I just think there's so many comparisons with Ben Johnson and Sean Payton. It maybe not direct, but again, they are part of the same tree in a way. But I just think this is going to be a zone team, a little boot heavy team, play action heavy team, which really is a lot like the 2000s, the aughts Saints with your early Drew Brees. Jonah Jackson, of course, is a tone setter, but I just really like what they're doing with that interior. And even the guy that they drafted in the second round, Ozzie Tripilo, I like him too as a swing tackle that they can maybe develop into a starter at one of the bookends. And they got him at the right range. They're not saying, hey, you have to start right away like this team has done in the past with their day two offensive lineman. It's like a plan. It's not going to be always perfect this year, but at least I believe in this plan as opposed to some of the ideas they've had in the past. Oh yeah, Nate Davis. Oh yeah, Shelton Coleman. It's like, okay, I recognize those names too, guys, but like, they can't play. So like, they have starting experience, but they can't play. Sam Mustipher. I shouldn't know these centers' names, but I do because they are so atrocious. And on top of it, they added Colson Loveland at tight end, which I really like that selection. So yeah, just the Bears' offensive beef with Joe Tooney kind of leading the charge. And it's not just the on-field stuff. It's just the versatility, the break glass in case of emergency, and just, on-field play and leadership. So really excited about this, and this is one of my more favorite signings and trades. Just one more favorite moves from this offseason, just what the Bears are doing in totality.
Yeah, I had Ben Johnson on my list just to encompass like the Bears, you know. So like we skip mine. Like that was my next one was Ben Johnson to the Bears, just because I think there's so many people. Like there was just such a disaster last year. Because I hate myself. Like the first thing I wanted to do when I was like, all right, I got to start charting these year two wide receivers for reception perception. I was such a big Roma Dunze fan that was the first thing I decided to do was to revisit the 2024 Bears offense. And it's just been a minute. So I was like, wow, this really was horrifying from like every level. Obviously, like the pass protection from a player talent standpoint in the interior wasn't good. The plans weren't good. Just the overall environment for Caleb Williams was atrocious. I think they put so much on his plate too, which, you know, at times it's like, oh, this is really encouraging. But at the same time, you're also overloading a rookie quarterback who, you know, kind of like, I like Caleb Williams overall, but we all know he's got a tendency to want to play off script. I think he does great stuff when he's in structure. Putting so much on him in a horrible environment basically leaned into some of his worst tendencies. None of the receivers were maximized. Keenan Allen sucking up a bunch of volume there and not doing a lot with it. DJ Moore's pissed off. Roma Dunze is like wasted on these downfield routes. So I'm just excited. I don't really know. I don't have a lot of clarity on how people are going to get used here, but the fact that I think Ben Johnson showing like, all right, I'm attacking the offensive line with a lot of creative solutions there in terms of we're trading for Joe Tooney. We're obviously going heavy on Drew Dahlman, getting Trapillo in the draft, in addition to bringing his boy from Detroit over from the Rams. Like, I liked that. And then, honestly, him coming out there and saying, we put some people on notice in terms of taking Colson Loveland and Luther Burton, and it's not hard to figure out who he's talking about with those picks. Mm-hmm. I think that actually made me more bullish on him as, like, a serious person. And I think this offense needed some serious help. So I'm with you, Nate, that the Tooney thing was a big part of, like, trickling down from Ben Johnson. What I'm excited to see this year.
Yeah.
Just look like a football team again. Just look like a football team again, man. It got away from you last year. It really did. But it's looking like a more credible operation this time around. Like you said, they got a plan. Just get it done. We've been saying this for like 20 years, man. Just get it done. Yeah. Please.
I'm liking it all. Like the Dennis Allen.
I like it. It looks good. It looks good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point about putting people on notice too, because that's the thing is the Cole Kmet experience has been frustrating for me as an outsider, but I know he's a team favorite. But then Ben Johnson comes in and just goes, prove it. There we go. That is team's talking. I'm like, okay, but I like that. They're not just going, no one gets grandfathered in. You guys weren't winning. Yeah. Why should you get grandfathered in? Prove it. You got to prove your spot. I like that a lot. So that's why. So nice little tag team here on the Bears. So Charles, what is your next one? Next favorite new face, new place?
I went with Laremy Tunsil and Josh Connolly taking over the offensive tackle jobs in Washington. I thought it was interesting that they made a these big swings at offensive tackle. Just considering the success they had last year, I thought that maybe they would have invested a little more in the defense or maybe a little differently in the defense. But it's never bad to go out and try to get upgrades along the offensive line. And as long as, like, the Laremy Tunsil thing is, I go kind of back and forth on him. I think as long as he doesn't have, you know, what, 17, 18 penalties, again this year, you're fine with that trade, because I do think he's taking a bit of a step back, but still starter quality. Like when you're looking at the whole package, and then we got Connolly on the right side, who we were all pretty bullish on. So like you're stabilizing that offensive line for Jaden, which is I think it's a smart play, and I also think it's a very self-aware move where you're looking at Jaden like, okay, you're gonna take some hits. You're going to take some risks. So maybe we can use some assets just to raise the floor here a little bit. So you're not living on third and fourth down as much as you were last year. I think that's probably always going to be a little bit of the Jaden Daniels story, but at least you just have just a little bit more stability. And obviously the run game is going to improve too. So like anytime you have a young quarterback that is obviously that talented, improving the offensive line, like I didn't see them like making two huge moves like that, but I think it makes sense, and I think they're going to be better for the long haul for it.
Yeah, the Debo thing was like, okay, I get it, but don't. It's just like, all right, don't just eat your candy. Like you need some vegetable, and it was great. Okay, Tunsil thing, like you said, I was like, okay, good. But then the Connolly thing, I was like, good job, Commanders, good job. Not just going, well, Cliff will scheme it up. Jaden will make us right, as a lot of execs and personnel decision makers will do sometimes, and go, well, we got to shore up this. No, keep your strength to strength, and also just make your lives easier. And maybe it's just because I love Connerly as well, and I just like this draft pick a lot. And also, I like the they got Trey Amos. Talking about the defense, the whole defense is a different discussion. But at least Amos over there is a nice pick as well. But I'm with you on this one, Chuck. I really like that both of these moves here because they needed beef, and also you want to protect the franchise. And Jane Daniels is the franchise, so this is a good long term thing as well, short term thing I think as well. Probably go on to Matt, since we tag teamed that last one. Why don't you take the lead here on your next one? Because I felt like I co-opted that tag team that one. So what was your next new face and new place?
Sure. I'm also maybe playing to your hits here. I'm excited to see Josh McDaniels at the head of the Patriots offense because I think it's, again, an adult in the room when he's not the head coach as the offensive coordinator for Drake May and the boys over there. I mean, again, another disorganized, nonsensical offense last year. I think conceptually Alex Van Pelt did some fine stuff, just like typical, nothing crazy innovative, pretty standard NFL stuff. But I think you could see all throughout, the offensive line was talent deficient and so was the receiver room. But the details also sucked at both positions. And I mean, especially at wide receiver, there was a real just lack of cohesion, lack of coaching. And I think a real problem in terms of putting guys in their proper positions. I mean, I know, again, I bring up Jalen Polk all the time, but you can't tell me that wasn't a pretty significant coaching issue there. Beyond that,
catch the ball. Catch the ball,
yeah,
dude.
Like, catch the ball. Like, catch the ball, also block. I mean, he was one of the worst. Man. it's on my to-do list, so I'll take care of it for you. It's pretty rough in the first chapter of the season, I'll tell you that. But anyways, just again, I think having somebody who's a proven offensive coach here and Josh McDaniels is good for everybody involved, specifically Drake May. I mean, Drake May's already talked about like being excited to watch that Cam Newton. He was excited watching that Cam Newton offense, what they can do with like the quarterback run game. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
You have some receivers in here who can separate. Shoot, even like his first year with the Raiders, again, I think McDaniels having too much power as a coach and any personnel decision is a proven terrible idea at this point. But that offense still like put defenses in conflict with having Davante Adams and like a power run game behind it. Josh Jacobs leads the NFL in rushing. So the second season, we can just, whatever it was, like we can just skip past that. But overall, I'm very confident this is going to be a good thing for the quarterback.
Like you said, adult in the room. And he is. That Cam Newton, Josh McDaniels marriage for that one season is one of my favorite weird offenses that I've watched since I've been in media. Just because it was just such a hybrid, very pro style, very traditional NFL offense with Cam. And it was just like some Cam sprinkle magic on it with his rushing ability. They'll always have that Seahawks game. If you guys remember that, I don't know if it was Monday night or Sunday night.
Dude, he looked like a Hall of Famer, man.
Good.
I thought he was back, all the way back. Yeah.
But Drake can do that. Like May can handle, not maybe all the in between the tackle stuff that Cam Newton could. A lot of quarterbacks can ever do that. But there's some stuff. There's some movement stuff. And there's going to be an at-you run game. The Kyle Williams edition is one of my favorite draft picks. Not only just because I like the player, but it makes a lot of sense for what the Patriots needed. Speed, outside ability. I'm with you. Adults in the room. Got some offensive lineman beef. It's going to look okay. Charles, the Patriots over-under right now is at 7.5. What are you taking? 7.5 wins, I should say.
Maybe slightly under. I think they just need a little bit more juice. And I think the offensive line, like, it's better.
But easy schedule.
Is it good? Yeah, easy schedule, but it's another 50-50 coin flip team. I want to see just more playmaking from them on defense too, like in the front seven. Because I just thought they like, obviously when you lose Barmore, Bentley gets hurt, it's going to be tough. But because we were high on the defense last year. They got some pieces. I just think it's still a little bit of work in progress, but that division is not that difficult, especially if you can get past Miami and they implode this year. Yeah, I guess 7 wins sounds about right.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Jets.
I might be in 8 wins for them though. Like they're maybe a year away from that, unless May just goes supernova. Non-zero chance. I'll move on to my next one, and this is just a draft pick. It's a draft pick to, it's one of my, it was actually another one of my favorite draft picks, and that's Mykal Williams to the 49ers. And talked about it a ton in our draft shows, that I just like this, and I think that the 49ers needed this. They drafted some smaller players as the draft went along, but their first two picks with Mykal Williams and Alfred Collins, this is, again, no more half measures kind of thing. Enough is enough. Because even, I knew this defense dropped off, especially run games. Yes, they had injuries. Dre Greenlaw wasn't playing. You're relying on Devondre Campbell. I get all that. But I just think this is Mykal Williams is the perfect complement for Nick Bosa. And it's something I said draft night, said draft recap show, all this stuff. But upside as a pass rusher, yes. But he's going to enter the league as a plus run defender, like a very good run defender. And I am positive of that, with a chance to be one of the best in the league at 21 years old right now, with a developing pass rush game. But he doesn't need to be the ace. That's what's great. But you look even statistically at how far this 49ers run defense has fallen. That has been the big weakness of this entire defense. They're going to play soft boxes. They rely a lot on Fred Warner staying clean, reading the runs, everyone just mucking it up and making the tackle. That's worked a lot. They've been able to do these type of defenses, and they're going to keep doing it under Robert Saleh. But that run defense just kept dropping. So in 2019, when they made the Super Bowl run, lost to the Chiefs, shout out Jimmy G, the EPA per rush, 9th in the league. 2020, 9th. 2021, 1st. 2022, 2nd. All right. Let's bring in the gravedigger, Javon Hargrave, who's a gap shooter. Let's just get all speed on the defensive line. 2023, 28th in EPA per rush allowed. 2024, 28th in EPA per rush allowed. They were 31st in the second half of the season, only better than the Panthers, who, that was a bad defense last year. They were 22nd in the second half of the season, rushing suplex. I changed sex rate, by the way, Matt, to suplex. That's success rate plus explosive play rate.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's suplex rate now. I know. And then they had the lowest stuff rate since 2019. And then the last one, because this is again, this defense wanted to get to third down. So, and this is a stat that we always talk about too, Charles, is average distance to go on third down. Okay. Last year, 6.3 yards allowed to distance to go on third down for offenses, 30th in the NFL. Their previous low was 6.9. So it's over a half yard difference from their lowest low before that. 2019, they were fourth. 2020, 15th. 2021, 10th. 2022, third. All right. Here comes the downslope. 19th in 2023. 30th in 2024. So again, it's just you see and feel this whole defense, because that was such a big thing. It was, I always just say, they dared you to take nickels and dimes, and then they just turned them into pennies. Do you remember the Cowboys matchups in the playoffs? Like they just smothered the run game and smothered it all. They just lost that calling card. So I just love Mykal Williams as kind of indicative of what they're trying to go for, even if they couldn't help themselves later in the draft. I just love this pick. I really, really do. And so I just want to reiterate here for the 40th time.
So, yeah.
But they also drafted.
If it's been a week, we talk about him a lot. Yeah.
I know. So we can just move on again. I just had some stats this time to just kind of drop that hammer on. So Matt, what is your, actually we had one more overlap that we'll get to later, but Matt, what is your next new face and new place here?
I think this is my last one. I think this is my fifth and final. Vikings interior offensive line, Donovan Jackson, Ryan Kelly, and Will Fries. Just because,
yeah.
I mean, in like one of them wouldn't be all that interesting, quite frankly, but all three together, I think, says a lot about what this team wants to be. A couple different directions in both run and pass game. I mean, number one, I do think they want to run the football, and I think they want to like be a much more, I think they just want to be a tough, more like physical team overall. They also added, in addition to bringing back Aaron Jones on a 2-year deal, they also added Jordan Mason from the San Francisco 49ers, like a move I had kind of forgotten about. But then, you know, he's on a 2-year deal, and I think he actually complements Jones really well. Like if anything happens to Jones, he's also a guy that we've seen with the 49ers last year. You can make him a number one back and give him a lot of work. And, you know, you can do the typical zone stuff with him, but I think you can also get with these big offensive linemen, you can also run more gap concepts as well, which is, I think, Kevin O'Connell's been kind of chasing that over the last few years. So that's pretty interesting to see that part of it. But also, similar to what we talked about with Caleb Williams, they're trying to build that interior wall, like a comfortable, it was something they needed to do, and they even talked about it right after the playoff loss, needed to make the interior offensive line better. That's going to be, you know, 10x more important with J.J. McCarthy under center now, who obviously is going to be the starter this year. I don't think this Rodgers stuff is anything to be concerned about. J.J. McCarthy is going to start for this team this year. And having a veteran center and just a big offensive line in front of him is, I think, going to be pretty critical to his development. So, again, in isolation, I certainly would have come in here and been like, Ryan Kelly is one of the five additions I'm really interested in. But, like, all of them together, I think the collective makes this a pretty interesting thing to track for a team that won a lot of games last year. And, I mean, we talk about this on the outside, like, oh, yeah, they're probably okay taking a small step back. I don't think any NFL team ever is coming to be like, we're okay, we're taking a small step back. So I think this has been sending a pretty clear message all offseason to us.
Yeah, like you said, one, okay, good. Two, all right, you guys are really getting it. And then, yeah, three, triples is best. You know, that you got, you get all three, triples is best. You know, but that, I love Jackson. I love this pick. I love what they're trying to do. This was so needed. Can't bring up those pressure rates with the Vikings again, but anyone that's listening to the show knows it was bad. Second half of the year was very bad. They were getting more pressure than everybody. It's an aggressive offense. They want the run game to be decent. You know, that's again, KOC is a McVay Shanahan guy. Like, he wants that to be a part of this offense, even how aggressive that passing game is. It's also just who the best players are. So I think this is great because it's going to help out the run game, the Jordan Mason addition as well, and it's going to help out the young quarterback. But Charles, what do you like this with the Vikings too? On the free agency stuff, we were pretty happy that they're doing these moves on both fronts, defense too.
Well, because we saw what happened when all those guys got hurt last year. It became nothing. Like,
that was it.
The Rams sacked nine times in the wild card game. I think they had to do this. It wasn't watchable. They had to do this, and I think they made the right, like, I think they made personnel moves that make sense and should work out. And I really like the Donovan Jackson pick, because if you think about the injuries they had last year, maybe you could kick him out of the tackle in a pinch if you had to, because that's what you did last year. So these moves make sense. And also, I think when you look at a quarterback who is kind of on the skinnier side and got hurt last year, it probably makes sense to just get some big boys so you can run the ball and protect a little bit better. And I think especially with KOC's scheme, they should rake in in the play action game this year. At least.
Yeah, definitely. And I always love the veteran center with a young quarterback. Like, I've always been a fan of that kind of battery to help out the guys. So that helps out a ton too. And they put a lot in the center with that. All right, Charles, actually, let's go to your next one, your next new face and new place.
I actually went in the opposite direction. It's not really positive, but, I went with the Houston Texans offensive line. And what prompted this is I was talking to one of my friends a little more casual about this stuff. He's like, I kind of thought that the Texans were going to draft offensive line in round one. And I was like, dude, like, they've added like four or five guys. Like, they don't you only have so many spots on the roster. And then we look through it, and you're like, he's like, wait, these guys suck, though. I'm like, yeah, they do.
They are new.
They are new. They're different. Because we got Lakin Tomlinson, Ed Ingram, Cam Robinson. It's a lot of guys. So here's what I'll say about the Texans offensive line. If Ariante Ersery can't start this year, it's over. He should be walking into a starting spot on this offensive line. Yeah. It's always interesting, like, because the process is kind of sound, right? Like, they identified a problem. Offensive line wasn't good enough. All right, fire the offensive line coach, fire the offensive coordinator. We'll get a fresh face in here. We'll flip out memory tells for draft picks. Cool. And then you just added a bunch of like C, D level players. I don't understand how that's really going to fix your problem. Because even if the coaching has improved and, like, maybe you're a little bit more sound in terms of what you're doing down to down, you still got to go out there and actually make the blocks. So I fell on a rabbit hole where I was like, man, you just spam so many bad offensive lines to have just like stopping to think. And they did it so fast too. Like they acquired these guys in such rapid succession that I guess they must be high on them, which is a little bit different than I think how we feel.
We just, our last point that Matt just brought up was we really liked how the Vikings upgraded their offensive line. The Texans signed two of those Vikings offensive linemen.
Right.
And
the other one was from the Seahawks. So if you remember earlier, talking about that interior offensive line.
Who they drafted in the first round? His replacement, because they said, no, we can't do this again. And I mean, and again, there's noise with offensive line stats because context matters, but you can kind of get a nice little, you know, little identifier how guys are doing in one-on-one pressure rates. I found that's the stat that kind of like shows like truly how you're doing when you're one-on-one. So they got rid of the guy, Kenyon Green, who allowed the third highest one-on-one pressure rate, and now acquired the guards that ranked first, Ed Ingram, and fourth, Lakin Tomlinson. And you knew what tackle ranked second in the stat? Cam Robinson. So, like, truly, even if you say, okay, there's some noise there, bottom 10, we'll just call it bottom 10 in all these spots. Yeah. But like you said, if Ursary's not playing early, and I think he can, I like Ursary.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, like, you better be. Like, he absolutely better be. At least they got bodies, I guess. But the thing is they're just bad bodies. You know, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The alarming part is. The alarming part, if I were a Texas fan, is they think they fixed it because, right? Like, they're looking at what they did this year and they think that they fixed it. So we'll see. Maybe they're right. I don't think so because I've already seen all these guys play in the NFL for a very long time.
Let's go.
Cam Robinson drafted like 10 years ago, bro.
That's a new entity. Come on, CJ, we know he's not good. All right, I'll go on to my last true one, and then we have one last shared one, Charles, actually. So we went 13 of 15 not shared, but mine is Chip Kelly to the Raiders. Welcome back to relevancy, Las Vegas Raiders. That's really what it is. It's nice to treat them like a respectable team again. Yes, they haven't played a game under the Chip Kelly era, yada, yada, yada. It just feels different. That's signing Chip Kelly to a $6 million deal, getting Pete Carroll, having Tom Brady, having all these things with this offensive staff and this whole entire team. It's just this nice. I feel like I've just ignored the Raiders so much because I'm like, this isn't like going anywhere. Whether it was McDaniels, whether it was the end of the Gruden era, like it was just like, oh my God, what are you guys even trying to do? Now you get Pete Carroll. Now you get respectability. Now you get Geno Smith on this roster. You go to Ashton Jeanty. Yes, maybe you're putting the cart before the horse, getting a running back. But you're going with a coach that I think can get the most out of a talented running back with Chip Kelly. Raheem Mostert's in that backfield too. That was a terrible run game. Now it's at least more explosive. Even just some of the draft picks I like, the projects they took on the offensive line. This defense was decent last year, and I think it's a fun kind of merger of ideas with Carroll and Graham. You know, like that, I'm curious of how that will unfold as well. But, you know, they were 14th in suplex rate, 17th in EPA per play. So, you know, like a middling defense or mid-tier defense that I think could be above average next year, especially, well, we'll see what happens with Wilkins. But a unique pass catcher group, explosive backfield. Chip Kelly's going to have some fun ideas. Pete Carroll's Pete Carroll. Yeah, I'm just this was my favorite one because it just feels nice to talk about them again, to have a, I don't know if it's a 32 complete team set because there's still a couple ones out there that I'm kind of squinting at, but at least we got the Raiders back, you know? So I just want to give this one a little shout out. Pete Carroll, Chip Kelly, fun little relevancy for the Raiders again in Las Vegas, my adopted hometown.
I like that you brought this one up. I thought about trying to find a way to talk about the Raiders because I had kind of a similar feeling that, man, just look at like the recent most notable people attached to this franchise. Like, John Gruden, I mean, especially now, is just like basically a cartoon character. Josh McDaniels is, as I said, I mean, like a joke. Everybody hated him in that locker room. And then Antonio Pierce, like, he was like the meme of the, you know, dinosaur tough guy football coach that just doesn't, you know, it's like that was, or even maybe more so, you just the meme of the interim head coach that catches fire and then team makes mistake, keeps him on, and it goes like, as bad as it possibly could go in the second season. So just like whether this all works out or not, they at least have some serious people attached to this organization right now. And I think keeping Patrick Graham was a really good signal of that, that, you know, Pete Carroll's not just coming in here like, oh yeah, wiping everything clean. Like, no, there were some good ideas on the defense. Let's keep that around, and interested to see what they look like on offense. I mean, that is, you said it very well, an interesting group of pass catchers. Definitely does not fit the typical, like, this is your X, this is your Z, all that stuff. So how that fits together is going to be fascinating. No, yeah. not at all, which is cool. I think it's cool in May to theorize about. We'll see about it in practice. But either way, if I was a Raiders fan, I kind of feel similarly if I was a Bears fan with Ben John. Like, if it doesn't work with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, like, just give up. And if the Raiders, doesn't at least, like, I don't know what you want to define as work. Like, they're in the same division with Pat Mahomes. If it doesn't work with these guys, like, just give up. It's probably never going to work.
Let's actually see Pete keep him on, because they haven't, because that's not really it's the style trees, defense completely. That Pete is at all. But I think it goes to Matt's point where Pete's looking at it. He's like, all right, well, he's got some good ideas. Work with the players, probably come up with something good. And even if not, you already showed he can handle himself, which is probably pretty good for a coach in his 70s, you know?
we already got someone who wants to be a CEO again. Yeah, because that was the thing, is in Seattle, they had the brain drain, you know, that part of the Legion boom gets a lot of guys' jobs. And you could tell at the end there, when, you know, he got rid of Kenny Norton, and he, the last couple of years of that defense, you could tell he got more hands on. And I'm sure a 70-year-old was kind of going like, all right, I don't really feel like game planning, guys. I feel like just motivating and, you know, saying some fun stories to the media and stuff, you know, not so much like I want to get my hands dirty with this game planning stuff. And but tied into this, I think Josh McDaniels, when you hear the term Peter Principle, it should just be a picture of Josh McDaniels right there. Everyone gets promoted until they get promoted too far. And that's Josh McDaniels right there too. So, Charles, let's bring us home. We're sharing this one, but I'm going to let you take the lead here. What was your last favorite new face in a new place? And I do think this is a positive one as opposed to the Texans one.
Yeah, this is a good one. The Broncos, I guess just kind of taking care of the spine of their defense. Yeah, that wild card game, that was bad. It was bad news. The Ravens game, that was bad news. You're they're really close to having one of those truly like stalwart defenses. But as we saw last year, the top offense in the league could still push around like they were nothing. Yep. So re-sign DJ Jones to 3-year deal. You go out and you draft Jahdae Barron in the first round. He's going to be your nickel corner. You got Dre Greenlaw, Hufanga, the safety from the 49ers. So they saw what everyone else saw, and they went after it in a really, really aggressive manner. I really liked even the Barron pick from a perspective of, like, we got to get a little tougher because he's going to be someone that flies down and hits. And I think playing with PS2, Pastor Tim, is – like the perfect situation for him, where you don't have to think about any of that, bro. Just sit here, make some tackles, cover the short stuff, and everything else should be okay. So obviously the wild card here is Dre Greenlaw. He didn't really play that much when he came back. So we'll see what happens there. I hope he's good. But man, if these guys hit and pan out, and Hufanga and Greenlaw get back to players that we know they can be, If Barron hits, then this defense should really, really take off this year.
Yeah, my bold statement right now on May 8th is that this is the best defense in the NFL this year. I am, again, this was one of my new faces, new places, same reasoning as you. Barron, Hufanga, Greenlaw. I mean, you just look at every level. The front is just a bunch of big maulers. Zach Allen, DJ Jones, John Franklin Myers. They drafted Savion Jones from LSU, who's another heavy-handed guy that can kind of kick inside on times too. Pass rushers, Nick Benito, Jonathan Cooper. That's real twitch and speed on the outside. Inside linebacker, okay, Greenlaw is the question mark. He looked okay, actually, coming back last month. I was like, oh, okay, keep bringing the guy's name up, but better than Devondre Campbell. And he's a tone setter and everything, but he already had a quad scare where people were reporting that he got hurt again. So, like, just get to September. Like, I want to see this. But the DB room, man, best corner in the game, PS2. Riley Moss is a damn good number two when he's healthy. Hufanga on the back end's a tone setter. And also, just like you mentioned, Barron, great scheme fit, can play man. He can cover tight ends as well. I actually think that's one of the best things he can do, which frees up Hufanga and frees up those safeties from having to do that. He's a good blitzer, but he can play man against receivers as well. And also, I didn't know this, Vance Joseph's cousin coached him at Texas. Should have made that connection at some point. Joseph, there's a Joseph on the roster. You know, cousin, you know, have been a little different. But again, there's just a lot to like here. And I'm very excited about this defense. So that's why this was one of mine as well. But Matt, we'll flip it real quick. What'd you think about the Broncos offense now that you have maybe, you know, Pat Bryant there, you know, those new additions? Have you marinated on that at all? Or you still kind of feel the same?
I took Bo Nix in the eighth round of our first fantasy staff mock draft, because that's something you want to do in May. And I took Bo Nix. I was like, I still don't really know how all these pieces. I get paid to do this, so like I can't really complain too much about doing a mock draft in May. And it wasn't my choice, Charles. Like,
I'll say it for you.
Thank you, I appreciate it. So I ended up taking Bo Nix because I don't really know how all these pieces are going to fit together, but I think it's going to fit into something pretty cool. And I love the defense as well. Like that's what makes me really interested in the offense, especially because I think the defense is going to keep them in like really good positive down and distance situations. Yep. So like how RJ Harvey hits the ground running is going to be pretty critical to that run game, because we've talked about this 1,000 times on this show. Like this run game is ready to be maximized. Is RJ Harvey that guy? Sean Payton believes it. He's in love with him. Pat Bryant, he went a little earlier than I thought he was going to go, but he does fit exactly what Sean Payton looks for in like that bigger body.
Yeah.
I said Tim Patrick style receiver. He said Michael Thomas. I don't know if I believe that Pat Bryant's going to be the next Michael Thomas.
I think I do think he more than anybody.
Exactly. Same. Yeah, right. Yeah. Again, in that sort of bucket of receiver, Tim Patrick, Marcus Colson, that works really well. Is this still just going to be Cortland Sutton and then everybody else is in his orbit? That's kind of how I think about it. So I do think from a fantasy perspective, I was like, let me just get the guy who's going to distribute the football here and do a little bit of the running himself, which will be Bo Nix. So I like how the defense is going to keep them in positive down and distance situations, because I was really high on those additions you guys talked about as well. Offensively, we'll see how all the pieces come together, but I do think the picture is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the run. It's a run game defense and plenty of passes and get dialed up with Bo Nix and Sean Payton. I'm more bullish on the Bryant pick, as I've kind of that's why I wanted to ask you, marinated on a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, this makes sense for you. Big body, good hands, tough blocker. Actually, he has more yak than I gave him credit for. Not just because some of the
touchdowns. He breaks tackles, man. He's really, he's something after the catch. So I think he's probably going to be like a plus version of what they got out of Devon Vele last year. Very similar. Yeah. Like he's a big body. He was mostly playing in he's bigger than Bryant. And he'll probably play a lot of the slot, both those guys. So, I think that's kind of how I viewed it, too.
Broncos, I'm bullish on it. I just that defense can be so, so, so badass. I'm excited. Good old line and a good defense. Yeah, you got me. Yeah, I'm going to be a sucker for that every time. We're going to take our last break, and we'll come back with a couple mailbag questions. Finally, we got some. We'll hear from you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We're going to get to a couple mailbag questions. And a reminder, you can either send in those mailbag questions to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave us that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And I swear we'll get to them, because now we're mailbag time. All right, first off, we got Austin here who asked, team, thank you for all you do. Football 301 is so amazing. Thank you, Austin. Nate said Abdul-Carter had very, very good bend, but not elite bend. God, you got to love those details between very, very good and elite, huh? The question from Austin, though, is who has the most elite bend for edges in the NFL currently and the most elite bend ever that you've ever seen? Charles,
do you ever seen Von Miller?
Anyone that comes to mind?
Von Miller.
Von Miller.
That's what came to mind to me. Go watch the Texas A&M highlights. He was like detaching the top half of his body from the bottom half of his body to get around guys. It was disgusting. That's number one.
Scraping his ear on the ground.
Literally. And like never going in like Gumby mode, never losing balance. It was ridiculous. Yep. Number one right now, though, that's a good question.
I know. I would think on this too.
I'm about to look up
Brian Burns.
Brian Burns is good.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Brian Burns is a good example. He's not a complete player, but like he will come screaming, bending off that edge. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, because all the other guys, Garrett
Parsons.
Parsons would probably be the answer, even if that's like not the first you think about with him. But I mean, we're kind of in a little bit of a dearth of like bendy edge rushers, and we've got a lot of like power. Like there's a lot of power guys out there right now.
Yeah, because they don't teach these boys how to rush the passer anymore.
Yeah, right. Power, power, power. Three down. You ain't
just Jared Burris run through you.
That's it. Hey, you're 240. Be a 4-eye and take on this double team. Have fun. Actually, we just mentioned
Will McDonald's up there too.
Nick Benito has some bend. I would say he's the bendiest guy in the league, but he actually has some as well. That's actually a good question to think about currently, because so many of these guys right now are more power based and everything. But Von Miller is the guy that comes to mind. The other guy that was a freak bend guy, Julius Peppers, like at 280, 290. He could do things that you couldn't even fathom. So, and I've seen
this reminds
that
me of
another one I can think of.
Yeah, this reminds me of a draft crush that I had a few years ago. And when I go back and look at his clips, I still don't feel wrong. Kamoko Ture, this defensive end from Rutgers a while back, he had crazy bend around the edge, but it just never clicked for him in the NFL. But him getting around the edge, it was a sight to see, but he just wasn't that good. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was held on him for years.
That's a really good. I should remember as soon as you said his name, it was like, boop. Because I remember the turf, like where that old Rutgers green turf is like greener than others. Yeah. So that's what came to mind when you said his name. So like the turf is green, a different shade of green, like whatever. I don't know what it is, but theirs is a different shade of green. So I can picture it right away whenever someone says Rutgers. I know. No, that's a good question. Danielle Hunter's got some bend, but he's more of a technician kind of stuff. He's like a junk ball pitcher a little bit, and Trey Hendrickson's more of a technician as well and speed guy. So yeah, no, I like this question for scouting scale. The one I've been on, it's 2 to 8, like baseball or anything. 8 is the top of the scale, but they say that 9 is rare. And if you ever give a 9, that's the guy that sets the scale. And for me, it's Von Miller. Von Miller sets the scale of bend, so that he's the 9 of this category for me. So I like this question though. All right, next one, another Austin Knapp. In light of Ben Johnson saying 80% of the time in the NFL, it works every time, the team with the higher passing game EPA wins the game. What is the best path slash structure to get higher passing game EPA in today's NFL? Matt, you want to take this one as I think about it for a second?
Don't get your quarterback sacked a billion times would be number one. Don't get your quarterback sacked. I mean, sacks take a lot away from EPA, obviously. That would be the biggest thing. So, and by the way, we talked about the Bears earlier in the show. Let's build that interior offensive line around Caleb Williams. That's number one. I would also, don't waste first down plays either. That's a pretty critical part of this too. And that's really where I'm interested to see like Ben Johnson from a play calling perspective, because again, they built the offensive line. That's good. They've done like nothing at running back, man. And everybody expected them to replace DeAndre Swift because of him and Ben Johnson's like past it in Detroit and how he was like booted out of there. Maybe Ben Johnson wasn't the guy who decided to boot DeAndre Swift out of there. Maybe I wonder how much of we have a physical ground game. We're built off that. Was that more like Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes and not Ben Johnson? Because this team with DeAndre Swift as the lead back, and like we got Roschon Johnson and all these other guys, they're not really equipped to like run the ball a lot, especially on early downs. So I bet we see this team have one of the highest neutral pass rates on early downs if you're not getting your quarterback sacked, if you're just getting positive plays on first down from a passing perspective, you're getting then in favorable second and long type second and short type situations. You're not in third and longs. You start to break the cycle of bad EPA, because you think about these teams that they run the ball on first down. Then they get themselves like, all right, well, now we got to pass the ball. It's an incompletion. Now we're in a third and long situation, or we run the ball we take a sack on first down. Well, we got to run the ball to like gain some yards back. Then we're in third and long. Like you got to kind of stay ahead of the sticks here a little bit. I think that that's where I'm really interested to see where this Bears offense looks like using them in particular. But yeah, number one to me is don't get your quarterback sacked a bunch and stay in positive down and distance situations.
I've been number three. Tell Kevin Warren to do his damn job and get a dome on the stadium. Come on now.
Hey, it can't
be a full coincidence. The Big Ten. Yeah, I don't know. It can't be a full coincidence. This one team, they always suck on offense, always. And the field looks like crap, always. You know? I think everything that Matt said there is right.
Yeah.
It is real.
It's real. Watch Rams Bears last year and watch that win. And wonder why it didn't feel like it? Because you got two quarterbacks that can freaking cut through the wind with their arms and Caleb Williams and Matt Stafford. But any other quarterback, a mere mortal, that ball's flying out. A Mitch Trubisky, that ball's out of bounds every single time. Like it's so hard to play there. And then on top of that, the grass sucks because the city of Chicago is in charge of it. So they can never upgrade it. So that's a great point, Chuck. There's park effects in baseball. There are, but there should be park effects in football too. It's like, you playing the Superdome field turf? Oh yeah. All right, we got to knock you down because that's offense friendly, you know. But yeah, no, this is a great point. But sacks, I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, because teams lose more EPA on sacks than anyone thinks, and teams are getting sacked more because these quarterbacks are athletic. The defense and the pass rush is so much more aggressive now and so much better now that sacks and preventing sacks has become more important than ever. So that's a great point. And honestly, like multiple sacks can make you lose more EPA in a game than one interception, than one turnover. And yes, a turnover is impactful. You don't possess the ball anymore. But if you take three sacks in the game, you technically are losing more from those. But really, it's funny. Like EPA does reflect, in a way, the old coaching adages of what's the most important things, because this is stuff that boosts expected points anyways. Situational football, meaning third down, red zone, and explosives. How do you gain explosives? Because explosives will jump your EPA up. If we're expecting you to get a little bit here and you get a lot of it, that's going to bust. You know, that's a lot of expected points you just added. So those are just classic football edges. So it's an explosive passing game, mitigating sacks, and then red zone, third down. So just to kind of continue on your thought there, Matt, because I do think what the Bears are trying to do does speak to what that is. Like, be it there's efficient, there's explosive. You want to be efficient on the ground, explosive through the air. And that is funny that it's kind of been that way since the 90s. And it's kind of coming back in full right now because that's what defenses are daring you to find. So fun question, though. I like this. It's something I've marinated on a lot is how damaging sacks are. So I'm glad we got to kind of revisit this. Great questions. Again, if you want to send those in, football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave us that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We're going to be getting to a few of those over the next couple of weeks. We're closing it out today, though. We're on a once-a-week schedule. We'll be back in a week next Thursday as well. I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That is Charles McDonald @4Verts. That is Matt Harmon @Matt_BYB. That's a correction. We'll be back next Wednesday. That's right. We're doing Wednesday pods from now on, just to get in your ears a little bit earlier. But Charles, Matt, I'll start with you. What are you working on right now? You just did a piece, and I wish I could think of it off the top of my head. Did you do Travis Hunter?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I
did write about Travis Hunter. Did you write about Travis Hunter, Matt?
Okay. No. I did like last week. I kind of forgot that was last week.
That was last week. Yeah, I wrote about Travis Hunter. You know, the week after the draft is always kind of interesting from a content perspective because you don't really want to do anything, but rookie minicamp is starting anyway. So I was looking, I was like, man, what is interesting about rookie minicamp? I'm like, Travis Hunter is interesting. I was like, he might be the only interesting thing, actually, because I don't give a crap about rookie minicamp. And then I was like, wait, is this the most interesting rookie minicamp of all time? So that's why I wrote, is it the most interesting rookie camp of all time? I think it is, because we're talking about it at all.
I'm trying to even think. Yeah, I can't think of anyone else. Probably like, I don't know if interesting, but most news was freaking Tim Tebow, maybe, when he went to Denver. He was signed somewhere else. You know, those kind of Tebow-esque minicamps, because that's all the reps he was getting.
One of the ones I remember from when I was a kid that people cared about was people who didn't really get football were pissed that Chris Leak, the Florida quarterback, didn't get drafted.
Yeah.
And then he threw the football the back of the offensive lineman's head like the first day at rookie minicamp. Got cut.
Dude, he threw the prettiest spiral I've ever seen in my life. I'll go to the grave saying him and Warren Moon, prettiest spirals I've ever seen in my life. Matt, what'd you work on this past week?
Yeah, I wrote the Pickens piece that I mentioned earlier. So if people just haven't gotten their fill of like the only interesting news, hopefully, fingers crossed, the only interesting news story that we're going to get in May, and go check more of that out there.
Love that. Yeah, I'm glad we got the little synergy at the top of the show with that too. I wrote about Arch Manning. That was fun. He's good. He's got the goods. Spoilers. He's worth the hype. Not sure what draft he's going to go in, but he's very good, guys. Very excited to watch him next year. But yeah, had that. Too early, 226 big board. Make sure to check those out. All of that stuff on Yahoo. Make sure to check out everything Matt and Charles are doing. They do fantastic stuff. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thank you to everyone behind the scenes for all the work they do. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next week.